Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. It is episode 5, season 7. I owe you all an apology because last week I said it was episode 3 and it wasn't. It was actually episode 4. So for your download purposes, it probably looks slightly confusing. So me bad, but not quite as bad as what Jack's phone reception was last week. And again, we apologise for that as we did on Twitter. Anyway, back to normal this week, folks. A cracking show because it's just going to be the boys. We're going to have Gus Greensmith coming up at the end, who made his debut in WRC 2 for 2017 with his new co-driver, Craig Parry, on Sweden. Good solid result for him, so we're going to be talking to Gus a little bit later on. But without further ado, we are kind of back to our normal format. On my left, I'm going to say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
How is the alleyway you stood in?
It's not very clean. I'll tell you that. I won't go into detail, but it's not the cleanest alleyway I've been in. I'll tell you that.
And swinging completely in the other polar opposite direction. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, and I'm not in an alleyway.
I know. I suppose we should point out why Jack's in an alleyway as opposed to perhaps.
No, just leave it.
Hanging, right? Okay,
yeah,
fine. Let's just go with that anyway. Folks, I think we all know, obviously, last week was Rally Sweden, and I was a tad emotional, I don't mind saying, purely because, and I'm going to come to you first, Jack Bennion, purely because the little conversation, I think it was when Zav was the guest presenter the other week, and we were talking about Jari Mäty, and would it be deemed to be, almost a failure if Jari Mäty perhaps didn't secure a title, if perhaps his moments had gone. Did we miss call that, Jack?
It's looking interesting, isn't it? If there's anything you can say about Sweden, it's definitely made everything look a bit more interesting. And Monty, as we tried to say after the Monty, don't read too much into this because this is not how the season's going to play out necessarily. So we've had another rally, and I don't think we're any closer to working out who has the quickest car, because I think Jari was fantastic over the weekend, but again, Thierry led most of the event. So it's shaping up to be a fantastic year, isn't it? And I really can't wait till we get to some gravel and tarmac rallies and really work out who's got the best car for this year. It's so exciting, isn't it?
I do feel like a little bit of a broken record with this one, right? Because Jari, we've spoke about being fragile and everything else, and mind mapping and all these things that he's gone through, and he does go through his routines at stage start, but I can't help but feel old school man management of Tommy Mäkinen, who basically just don't worry about the setup, just go and drive.
Yeah, Jari talked about his chat, didn't he, with Tommy Mäkinen going into the last day, and like you said, that's exactly what Tommy told him, just to go and drive the car. And how long have we been saying that to Jari Matti Latvala for? If you stopped thinking about it and just relied on his talent, then I'm sure the results would come. But obviously, when you have a tough teammate like Sebastian Ogier in the same team who's just always one step ahead, it just wore him down. So we were obviously talking to Oisin Price last week, and I watched some of the footage with Oisin. As I said, it was great to see Jari Mäty smiling in a rally car again, because it's a long time since that's happened. He's clearly enjoying his new environment. He is the undisputed team leader, and the results are coming. So it's a long season yet, and I think let's not forget that it should be two dominant wins to Hyundai.
No,
it isn't, but a long season to come, but it's great to see where he is.
I think what you've just said there, it's like all the balls are being thrown up in the air, we'll come to MN this week, obviously. I think what's quite an interesting piece that David wrote here, and it was a story that was bouncing around, I think, pre-event or certainly during the event, was with regards to Jari Mäty saying how crucial it was when he arrived at Gazoo or Tommy Mäkinen Racing and or the Toyota World Rally Team setup, whatever name we want to give it. It was a very crucial period where he arrived right at the beginning of December in order to get this car somewhere where we've seen it on Sweden.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be easy to confuse those comments as being a little bit arrogant from Jari Mäty, but I don't think they are. I think it's just a case of, Jari's obviously worked with the likes of Volkswagen for the past 4 years and has got a lot of experience working with top teams. So he obviously brought brought something to the team that they didn't have before. And it's very easy to call to look at Toyota and think about the money that's going into it and that kind of thing. But, that outfit's building its first world rally car, and maybe in a year's time, they can have the money to keep the development up with the other manufacturers. But at the minute, they are very much the underdogs, if you like, aren't they? And they were going into the season. But it's really interesting to see Yari's comments and what he said and the fact that he thinks he's brought the team on. And I think fair dues for him coming out and saying it. But I think he probably has
right
developed the program a lot. He did a lot of testing in the 2017 car. So. With the BW 2017 car, I'm sure he brought something to the program.
Right, I'll come to you first on this. You are Hannanen, and I like you, and he's been around the block a little bit, hasn't done a great deal of WRC, obviously he was dominant in IRC, and obviously with Skoda and things like that. Are we seeing the difference here with somebody like Yari coming in, who has been a top-line driver, who's drove every evolution, I suppose, of a modern-day World Rally car, when you think back to when he started at age 18 in a Focus 02 car, over somebody like you or Hannan doing the testing?
I don't know, really. Ewan Hannanen is a bit of an enigma, isn't he? Like, if you look at the IRC or ERC, whatever it was at the time we're talking about, like, Hannanen was every bit a match for the Chris Meeks of this world, for the Andreas Mikkelsens of this world, and he's never transferred that into a World Rally car. Now, he's not had a lot of time in a World Rally car. When I say he's not had a lot of time in a World Rally car, I mean at World Championship level. And, is he trying to force the issue? Is he trying to force the pace? I don't know. I mean, from a testing point of view, like you said, Latvala's got incredible experience to fall back on of top-line World Rally teams with World Rally cars. And Hannanen has the driving experience, but maybe doesn't have that same depth of experience of driving World Rally cars. And, of course, Yari Matti's driven active cars before. He knows all about active transmissions. He went through that the first time. So, there's definitely more experience in Yari Matti's bank, if you like. But still, Hannanen, is a capable pair of hands. But he just does seem to be struggling this year to find any level of consistency. But I think, Latvala certainly has that experience that maybe Hannanen didn't have in terms of testing and development.
Jack, I watched the excellent Red Bull coverage, also the WRC Plus coverage. We're inundated with stuff at the moment, but I suppose the unique Red Bull coverage had a certain Andreas Mikkelsen offer an insight and everything else. Fantastic piece put together, and having Andreas as a co-presenter as well. You can't help but feel that. Do you think you're always going to be feeling a little bit under pressure after two very, very similar incidents, really, on both Monte Carlo and Sweden?
It's difficult, isn't it? And I think just briefly touching on what Ryan was saying there, I think, the WRC is full of drivers in the past who've been fantastic development drivers, fantastic test drivers, good engineers, well, good engineering mindset anyway, but never quite been able to deliver that at a proper World Championship level. So, I think you probably class in that level. He's a very good development driver, and he's been used by lots of different manufacturers to test cars and bring them on. But whether he can do it right at the top with the likes of OJ is definitely in question, isn't it? And that's the thing I'd add to that, really. But yeah, Mikkelsen, good to see him on the TV coverage, but absolutely horrible to see him stood there not in a World Rally car. You think he's definitely got the capability to be in the fight. You'd like to think if you give him any of the new cars that he'd be there or thereabouts. So seeing sat on the sidelines is heartbreaking, isn't it, really?
It is. It does feel very, very odd. But just before we move on from this a little bit and we start talking about some of the other teams, again, maybe it's a certain age, right? You and I are a certain age, but we know Jack loves his history as well. There was something tugging on the heartstring seeing a Tommy Mäkinen getting excited with a rally win and seeing a Toyota on the top step. I was conflicted, but really, really happy. It was a strange feeling.
I think it was great to see the Toyota commitment coming back to WRC, but for Toyota to take a win so soon, I mean, firstly, obviously, very unexpected, but secondly, great to see. Toyota have been big supporters of the WRC in the past. They've always done things properly. They've always had a big budget, a good team, a good car, and it seems, despite a lot of reservations, that this year's no exception. And it is great to see them back. And I guess an interesting journey for Tommy Mäkinen, because he's Obviously, he was synonymous really with Mitsubishi through his career, taking his world championship wins. He then finished his driving career with Subaru and went into to set up his own team with Subaru and with STI, and now he's moved on to Toyota. So he, you know, he's certainly well known to the Japanese manufacturers, and yeah, moved to another manufacturer very successfully.
Jack, I'll come to you, and then I'm going to come to Ryan on this one. I remember back way back when Tommy Mäkinen first set up. Tommy Mäkinen Racing, it was essentially set up on the pretense that he was going to take, allegedly going to take, I'm going to put in at this point, the Subaru Rally program there. And everything was geared for Tommy Mäkinen Racing, you know, the whole place. It's a fantastic facility, way beyond what was required to run Group M programs that he was running. And it was built purely to be a world rally team. Did you remember anything about that, Jack? Were you around? Were you a news hound back in those days?
Probably a bit before my time, to be honest. But yeah, you know, the thing I'd add to that is, you know, this is you know, it just shows that Toyota are right to give the programs to Tommy, don't they? Or at least they've been rewarded for the fact that they did, because, you know, everyone was very, very harsh when Tommy was given the program, and people questioning why it wasn't being run from the TMG facility in Germany, or whether it wasn't being done in house in Japan. A lot of criticism for the fact that this small outfit in Finland was getting control of, you know, one of the world's biggest car manufacturers' world rally program. And here we are, two rallies into their return, and they've won a rally. So, fair due to them. It's obviously turned out to be a good decision so far. We'll see how the car gets on through the rest of the year to see sort of how far they develop.
Absolutely. Right, moving on, boys. One thing I wanted to come to, I'm doing things kind of out of order here, but I'm kind of guessing that most of our listeners know what went on in Sweden as well, so they can kind of tap into what we're talking about. Something happened on Sweden which Ryan was fearful about when we were talking about these new cars. And of course, the obvious thing I'm talking about is what happened with Mads Osberg's car, right, losing that rear spoiler. How big of a problem was it? Did Mads milk it, or was it really as serious as what he made out, do you think?
I think the only way you'd know the answer is to be in the car, but it's definitely going to be a very, very difficult thing to drive without that rear spoiler on, because obviously the cars are geared to have a balance. They're designed to have a balance. You can only have a lot of aero on the back if you have the downforce on the front to balance it, or inherently the car would become unstable. So to still have downforce at the front and no downforce at the rear would mean the car would be, you know, incredibly unstable, particularly in the higher speed stuff. And Sweden is all about high speed stuff. So, no, I'm sure the car was a real handful to drive. Like I said, if you took a rear wing off a Formula One car, it would be undrivable. Now, we're not quite at those levels of downforce, but nonetheless, that rear wing is huge. And no, I'm sure it was a very, very difficult machine to thread down the very fast stages in Sweden. Mm.
Jack, I want to come to you now with regards to, again, I suppose it's, you know, we're going to talk about Citroën in a second, but obviously the other big thing is, which Ryan mentioned at the top, obviously this should have been another win for Hyundai, for Thierry Neuville especially. Now, you guys have run a piece here with regards to, Hyundai team principal, Michel Nandan, obviously, you know, having the chat with Thierry. Can you tell us a little bit about this one, please, mate?
Yeah, as everyone probably knows by now, Thierry is the second rally in a row threw it away on the last stage of Saturday with an incident on the Super Special. He took the tyre barrel and took the wheel off the front of the car. Michel Nandan's been quite outspoken in his quotes to MN, talking about sort of Thierry needing to learn from these mistakes now, and the fact that they're so far behind and they're in the driver's standings, even though they've dominated two rallies. You know, it is as simple as that, the fact that they've led from Friday and Saturday in both rallies, and Thierry's been, you have to say, Thierry's been sensational up until the point when he's thrown it away. So Nandan quite outspoken in the fact that he's telling Thierry that now's the time to kind of fuck up your ideas and make sure we get to the end of the next one.
Right, can you have perhaps a little bit of insight? I think a lot of people have mentioned that Thierry certainly looked at home, looked very comfortable, very relaxed, obviously happy with the levels of time he's had in the new car. Is it just bad luck?
Well, I was just having a little giggle to myself as Jack was talking there, you know, like he's got a slap on the wrist from the team boss, but nobody will be harder on Thierry Neuville than Thierry Neuville himself. He doesn't need anybody to tell him he needs to stop making mistakes. It's a bit like falling off your bike when you're young and hurting yourself and your mum saying you need to be more careful. Yes, I know that. I know that. I know what mistake I made, and I don't want to make that mistake again. And you know, Neville's shown incredible speed this year. He's looked to be really comfortable, and no one will want to rule out these mistakes more than he does. And yeah, he was quite unlucky. It looked like he'd been unsighted by, there was like the two tyre stacks, and it looked like he didn't quite see exactly where the second one was because he was unsighted by the first one. And it's one of those things, isn't it? If that had been Ogier glancing off those tyres, he'd have probably got away with it. But Thierry Neuville or a Chris Meek or a Latvala even in the past doesn't seem to get away with that kind of mistake. And you could say that Ogier doesn't make mistakes, but we've seen mistakes from Ogier. You know, we saw the spin in Sweden, and he does make mistakes. It's just generally his mistakes aren't significant mistakes, and I do feel for Thierry Neuville because it's been two minor mistakes that have cost him two World Rally wins.
I want to put something out there, and again, this is playing devil's advocate just a little bit. You just mentioned, obviously, you know, the look that that Ogier perhaps has over some of us. Is that not more management of risk percentage over anything else than what some drivers have?
To a degree, yes. I mean, he's, you know, Ogier is incredibly confident in his own abilities, just as Sebastian Loeb was before. And yes, he does manage. He probably does manage the risk, but yeah, you know, there's been some debate on social media about it recently. But if you look at the off the road excursions he had on Monte Carlo, he was very, very lucky. You know, there's no two ways about it. Yes, the one he said, well, I knew there was a field there. Fine, but the bank he went up, that could have had anything in there. The ditch that he went into, there could have been anything in there. You know, he does have an element of luck, but you're right. I mean, he's the best in the business, really. I don't think anybody would doubt that, and he is very good at managing his speed and his performance. You know, I think if you look at this rally, all right, he spun, he realised he couldn't then compete for the win, but that's what we see from Ogier. Ogier is always happy to take a third place because over the course of the season, he'll just keep picking points up. And Ogier, on a bad day, finishes third. A lot of other drivers on a bad day, you know, don't finish at all.
I guess that's what we're kind of missing this as well, boys. Here, I'm gonna open this up a little bit now, Jack. Is that have we lost the giddiness already? The fact that we've got another two cars from M Sport on a podium. That, you know, you think back. Even 6 months ago, that would have been, dare I say, almost unthinkable.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, it's just going back to the Ogier point. I think, you know, I'd say one of the stage performances of the weekend was the power stage from Ogier, and people might think I'm a bit stupid for saying that. I think, you know, looking how quick Latvala was on that stage, and he was fantastic. But Sebastian Ogier had the foresight to think about the championship going into that stage and throttled back a little bit on the power stage, still took points, and now look at the points. He's 4 points behind Latvala, but he's also not cleaning the road on one of the most difficult rallies on the calendar to clean in Mexico. So, you know, he's always thinking tactically, and, you know, talking about risk management and things like that. OJ is so strong mentally, he's always thinking about these things. He's always got one eye on the championship. I heard him come to one of the stages, and he was talking about championship points, and this was on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. He's already thinking 4 or 5 rallies down the line. He's already thinking about how he's going to win the championship. He's not thinking about how he's going to win this one rally, and that fits into what Ryan's saying there, where on a bad day, OJ finishes third. That's because he's always thinking about the championship, and he's always thinking about getting the maximum result he can for the car he's got underneath him, and he did that again at the weekend. Absolutely fantastic performance.
Obviously, it's the first time, I think, in 3 years, I think you guys have published something about this as well, Jack, that Sebastian Ogier has not led the World Rally Championship. But that does, of course, take away the pressure of running first on the road, right, on Rally Mexico. That's going to be for the joys of Yari Matti.
Yeah, and as Jack just said, you know, Ogier's the first to think about these things, and I bet he's really, really pleased about that. The first gravel rally of the year, high-altitude rally, which will be interesting to see how that affects these new breed of cars. But I'm sure he's looking forward to running second on the road for a change on the gravel rally, and he can follow Yari's lines and let Yari, to a degree, clear the gravel. But obviously, even running second on the road isn't ideal, but it's better than being first.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, boys. We're going to come to the elephant in the room. There's been plenty on social media. There's been plenty of comment with regards to some in-car footage, specifically of Stage 17 from Chris Mee. Jack, you guys obviously haven't ran too much about it. I don't know too much about the story. Obviously, it's more open to debate, but there's still some concerns, it seems, for Citroën.
Yeah, so I think yesterday there's a piece up on Autosport.com by David Evans citing a few curses from Stage 17 on Rally Sweden. Chris Mee clearly not happy with what was going on in the car. Not sure what's going on there, and I'm sure Ryan can provide a bit more sort of insight into the onboard. I know he's seen it, but Citroën really struggling again with suspension. I watched the power stage, and it looked like Craig Breen was driving a Mark II Escort as opposed to a 2017 or another car, the way the back end was hanging out on every corner. And David, again, in MN, has provided some insight into what he saw, stood at one corner, watching the cars go through. Citroën not quite there compared to the other cars. So, you know, Paris is going to be a busy time in spring for those guys, and they've really got, coming into the season, as favourites. It really sounds like they've got a lot of work to do, doesn't it?
Right. What can you add to that? Because there's been plenty. I'll be honest with you, we've had a couple of messages via our Twitter feed from one or two regular listeners as well with regards to the goings-on in this in-car footage specifically, and, you know, some of Chris's comments and everything else. But I must admit, we not comparing myself or ourselves to Chris, but we've all had bad stages in rally cars where we've all said stuff that, you know, you wouldn't want people to listen to. And I'm pretty certain there's a lot, if you watch every piece of in-car footage, there's always going to be something said about what's going on if the car's not behaving itself.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, isn't there? I mean, firstly, Chris does wear his heart on his sleeve. You know, Chris, if he is frustrated, he does tend to show that frustration. He's a very driven, determined person, and he for the first time has a real chance at winning the WRC in what he thought would be the best car, the best team, you know, which has been proven a whole number of times in the past. And here he is, having had two incredibly frustrating rallies, and you look at the Toyota he could have potentially been in, and it's taken a first and a second. So I can understand his frustration. You know, he really thought he would be winning rallies in this car right from the start. And Chris Mee hasn't just gone bad overnight. You know, I saw somebody commenting that, you know, Chris Meek's making all these mistakes and all the rest of it. Yes, he made a mistake in Monte Carlo, and yes, he had some spins and went off the road in Sweden, but there's more to it than driver error here. You know, the car at times looked undrivable, but the strange thing was it was inconsistently undrivable. So for me, it's not just setup. This isn't just down to suspension. It's not just down to ride out springs, dampers, geometry, because it's inconsistent. And to me, that must really come down to something in the transmission. The diffs aren't working correctly, or the diff maps, or the diff setup, or even, you know, there's a problem with the diffs. It was strange that Stage 17, we saw Chris really struggling, and yet on the power stage, he actually went okay. So there's definitely something inconsistently at play here. And if it was just set up, at the end of the day, Chris has done all the work in developing the car. And, you know, set up's something you can change. So whether it'll come out, whether we'll hear more about this, I'm not sure. But for me, I would guess it's a transmission issue.
Okay. Craig obviously quietly went about his business, but even at the stage end, Jack, you know, Craig was first thing he said, we've still got clearly plenty of work to do here.
Yeah, he did comment that after, I think that was after the power stage, wasn't it? He had a good start to the weekend, and then he had an incident where I think he went into a bank, and then he completely lost all his confidence after that, and really struggled after that. But, you know, if he's stepping up to a 2017 car after not so much WRC experience, then having a car that's not quite behaving how you want it to, it must be extremely difficult, more so for Craig than Chris, because, you know, Chris has been at the top level for a couple of years now, and obviously winning rallies last year, so he's much more sharp, if you like, in terms of his WRC experience, where Craig is still learning quite a bit, and I'm sure he'd be the first to admit that, and, you know, doing it in a car that isn't quite performing how you like is going to be difficult for him. But fantastic job again. That's the second fifth place in a row for Craig, and you know, he seems to be a safe pair of hands, doesn't he? I think that's what you can say about Craig at the minute. He's you know, I'm not saying that Chris's mistake was his fault, or that the reason why he's not finished in fifth is his fault, but Craig has brought the car home in difficult circumstances, so yeah, he should be credited for that.
But in fairness as well, Stefan Lefebvre, a steady pair of hands in the car that Chris used on Monte Carlo. I can't remember whether we had this chat on the podcast or not, but Ryan Champion has got some facts about that particular car. Are you familiar with that car, Jack Benger?
Not that exact car, no, but I'm guessing Ryan will fill us in brilliantly as always.
Ryan is going to give us some headline of facts about that DS3.
What, so you want me to do my WRC? Any other business now, do you? Is that what you're saying?
Is it to say, is that it your any other business?
Because I've
week?
Had this any other business ready for about 3 weeks and you've not allowed me to come out with it. So yes, it's still there.
All right. Well, we'll save it for later. Jack, you're going to love it. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. Jack, you will love it. So again, are we any further on, boys? Right, and I'll come to you first, Jack. Are we any further on with what we know about the teams and, you know, have we got someone who's going to dominate or what? Or are we still completely and utterly, you know, finger in the air stuff?
We're in between, aren't we? We've got a good idea if he's performing well and we've got an idea of the cars that are quick. But how they're going to get on, it's definitely always down to seeing them on gravel and tarmac first, isn't it? You know, Portugal's usually the marker where we judge new cars. That's all usually been, while the calendar's been as it is now, that's usually been the place where you kind of decide where everyone is on that rally, where the car's at. So, you know, I think it's going to take a couple more rallies yet to get a good idea. You know, people expecting Toyota to be as good on the gravel as they have been in the first two rounds. I'm not sure. I think they're likely to drop back a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see where we are at with the drivers. But, you know, in terms of pecking order, it's really, you know, it's not a no, but it's not a yes to your question, Tony. We do know a little bit more, but we still don't know everything. So, you know, it's a difficult situation to predict things at the minute.
Right. I suppose same point to you. Where are we at? Are we still second guessing? Because nobody clearly is, you know, you could almost say M Sport is probably the most constant out of all the teams, and that's from both from drivers and from equipment, I guess.
Well, yes and no. The fastest car and driver combination out there is undoubtedly Thierry Neuville. You know, he's been comfortably leading. When have we seen, you know, a lead of 40, 50 seconds after 2 days? Only from the dominant Ogiers of this world and Loeb. When they've been in the position to do it, and for Thierry to set those kind of times, that car is clearly fantastic. The slight caveat to that is obviously his teammates haven't been on the same pace, but the Hyundai looks very, very strong. I think the Ford will only get stronger because I still don't think we're seeing the best of Ogier in that car. It seems like he's still settling in. He's still trying to find the right setup. He's still changing things as he's going along. So I definitely think we're going to see Ogier improving that car. I think, like Jack said, I think Toyota have maximised everything on the first two rallies, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them drop back slightly. But for sure, you know, I fully expect to see Citroën going the other way and Citroën get to the bottom of their struggles with the knowledge that's in that team and the success that's been in that team in the past. Surely they've got to turn this around. So, like we just said, get Mexico, get Portugal out of the way, and we'll see a bit clearer. But I think Hyundai have got a fantastic car. The Ford is clearly brilliant and will continue to develop. The Toyota surprised us all, and you know, let's see what Citroën do with their issues. Mm.
Jack, one thing I'm a little bit surprised about. Maybe I know you guys had we spoke about it last week. It has been one of those stories that have bubbled along. But Julian Porter mentioned it on the show after Monte Carlo with regards to that he wouldn't be, well, he was adamant that Sweden would see a somewhat updated livery. I think it was for M Sport. I think was the words he used. Still nothing nobody kind of putting the head up, you know, above the parapet at the moment to add to that, whether it's Ford or whether it's somebody else. But any rumblings on that story at all, whether anything moved on?
No, I'm not entirely sure what you're referring to there, Tony, I'm afraid, but if you want to enlighten me a bit further, you can. But
well, yeah, we were talking about maybe some additional support coming in from another,
right,
maybe
right,
a,
yeah,
you know, another
yeah,
sponsor or something,
okay,
like that. Now, yeah. Julian was quite adamant we would have something else on the car by Sweden. Obviously the car still had the same livery as what it had on for Monte Carlo. Now whether that's, you know, whether it's the fact that whether Ford are going to step up or whatever, as I say, that Ford story's been bubbling along quite nicely, or whether it was anybody else. I just wondering whether you heard anything, that's all.
It wasn't Ford, as far as I know. I'd heard that there were supposed to be a few new sponsors coming on board for Sweden, but I think the period between Monty and Sweden was so tight, and the fact that M-Sport had to get another car out there made their schedule a little bit tight, and they did not quite manage to finalise anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was something sorted before Mexico, for sure.
Absolutely. Right, okay. A couple of things, boys, before we crack on. Just going to fly through a couple of quick stories before we go to a break. Jack, we've spoke about this off and on for a while, and we've talked about perhaps the concerns about the depth of ERC, but Peugeot Sport appear to be going back. Right, do you think it's a surprise Peugeot deciding to go back into ERC, having kind of flirted obviously with WRC2? No one's really got those cars working either. There's a lot of common parts, of course, between the 208 R5 and the DS3 R5. I can't help but feel it's perhaps not a full works kind of entry. It's possibly paying drivers. I don't know. What do you think?
We've sort of seen Peugeot involved, haven't we, in Europe still in a round and about manner. I mean, I think Carlos Sainz test the R5 car actually, was that last year at one point? I mean, like you said, it's not been a front running R5 car. Peugeot have got to be keen to sell these cars. So, I guess some work support and trying to get some results would help to sell these cars, to get people in, get these cars in people's minds, because at the minute, if you're going to buy an R5 car, really it seems to be the choice between a Fiesta or a Fabia. I mean, even the i20 is still only just on the radar, and as you said, the DS3 and the 208 have sort of slipped off it a little bit. So, yeah, I'm sure there is some Peugeot support in it. Whether there's some outside funding in there as well, we'll have to see. But I guess it's a good thing that we've got, you know, Peugeot coming in and putting some official backing behind the program. At the end of the day, the more manufacturers, the better, particularly in the ERC, that's had a little bit of a tough time recently.
It'll be interesting to see whether M-Sport get back behind one or two drivers that they've supported in the past and maybe fancy the fight, because M-Sport seems to be taking the fight to everybody in every major championship at the moment. Obviously still more news with regard to supposed two-car team for those guys in BRC. Jack, anything else you want to get off your chest before we go to any other business?
No, I think you've covered everything. I think we did a story on the drivers a bit confused about one of the stages being cancelled in Sweden. That was quite a good talking point for the weekend, and a few of the drivers were a bit upset about that. I don't know.
Yeah, by all means. I think there was something with regard to the average speed, and it wasn't frighteningly different from that of last year. Again, I'll come to you first, right? Are we in the realms of insurance here as well? Which insurance seems to be coming a bigger word in terms of rallying at every level at the moment, and you know, I suppose liability and all these things. I guess there must be a break point of an average speed.
Yes, but for me, this is a little bit of a worry. This is a bit of a worry in development, because as a sport, the FIA have allowed faster cars this year. We know that the whatever 60, 70 horsepower more, way more downforce, active transmissions. Is it surprising that the cars are going at a much faster average speed? No, of course it's not. Inherently, the cars are much, much faster. So we're always going to have faster average speeds. You know, this was never going to be a surprise. So for the FIA to turn around and say, well, you're going too fast now, we're going to start cancelling stages. Well, I'm sorry, but the only way we're going to stop this is to have a complete rethink of the stages we have in WRC, because we were already seeing the fastest average speeds we'd ever had with the previous generation of World Rally cars. So by adding significantly more performance, this is something we're going to see more and more of. So I do think it's a bit of a worrying development. There was a lot of chicanes in Sweden as it was. I don't ever remember seeing that many chicanes on the Swedish rally previously. So they're already putting chicanes in. And ultimately, a chicane is, yes, it's lowering the average speed, but it's not really making things safer. It's just lowering the average speed. So it's a worrying development, and I'm not quite sure we've seen the end of it, and I don't really know what the solution is either.
Jack, you guys have obviously wrote about the frustration of all the drivers. You know, he wasn't, you know, there's certain quotes from Tanak and a couple of other people as well. I think Rise just nailed the tat on there, really, isn't it? What were they expecting?
Yeah, you know, we've got sophisticated machinery now that if you drive for a stage, it can tell you roughly what the average speed is going to be. So on the recce, why was it not identified on the recce that a stage was going to be a problem, and then it rectified before the event? You know, Ryan said, you know, it's important that we think about a long-term solution, but the short-term solution there would have been after the recce to put a couple more chicanes in. I know drivers don't like chicanes and it's not an ideal solution, but at least we wouldn't have lost a stage, and the drivers still would have been able to go through some brilliant stages of Swedish Rally, and you know, we lost that stage completely. So I've not organised a rally, and I'm sure it's very difficult to do, and I don't need anyone to tell me how difficult it must be to organise a rally, but you know, to me that solution seems fairly simple given the sophisticated software we've got these days. I feel like that problem should have been identified before the rally rather than in between the morning and afternoon stages.
Boys, I think between the two of you, I think you've actually nailed the story, so I've got nothing to add to it because I'm not as intelligent as either of you. Right, we're going to crack on with any other business. We know Rise is a corker, so we're going to come to, and to be fair, Jack, I told you to have a corker ready for this week as well, so I'm feeling excited, it's fair to say. So we're going to come to you first, Jack Bennion.
Oh, I'm definitely going to let you down.
You're any other business for this week, young man?
I'm going to try not to. I knew you two would go something to do with Sweden or international, no. So I've gone really, really low.
No, I haven't. I haven't. But this is interesting. Go on.
Haven't you? Nope. I'm disappointed. I'm going to go so local that you're going to know more about the person I'm talking about than I am, Tony.
Okay.
Why any of the businesses relating to John Goff?
Ah, I had it on my pad.
The man who runs your Fiesta ST.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, Tony's the guy who runs Tony's car, John Goff. He's been involved in UK rallying for a long time and done a lot to help the grassroots of sport. And I'm sure Tony will, when I've finished, add a few words to that and give you a few more, a bit more detail. We could do a whole podcast on what John Goff's done for many young rally drivers over the years. But John's currently advertising the fact that he's going to rent out a Junior 1000 rally car for free. He's going to run the car, and all the parents of the driver need to do, or whoever's going to run the car need to do, is cover the damage. And John's had the grand total of one expression of interest in this car. And bearing in mind, John's offered to run this car for the whole championship, at the Junior 1000 Rally Championship. It's the place where Chris Ingram got his break. You know, so many young English, British drivers, Irish drivers have made their way into the World Rally Championship, having done something in Junior 1000s. And John Goff rented out a car for free. He's literally offered this car for free. And he's had one expression of interest. So if there's anyone out there listening who wants to get into rallying, you know, they should be contacting John, and you know, it says a lot about the sport that, you know, he's only had one person interested in the car. So please make contact with John if you're in the UK and you want to get involved in rallying, and really, you know, he should be thanked for what he does for getting young people into the sport.
I think, you know what, I couldn't have put it better myself. I actually had it on my pad to speak about this week. I was shocked. You know, I've known John for a long time. I wouldn't have done any of the rallying that I've done without John's support over the years. And to say when I spoke to him that when he mentioned to me he had one expression of interest, to say he was disappointed and confused and dumbfounded was an understatement, because we all know at whatever level of rallying we're talking about, whether it's, you know, starting out with juniors or whatever, what I do, what Rye does, you know, there's a level of expense. And yes, there's a level of expense with this car, but the biggest bulk of the expense, I'm sure you'll agree, right, is somebody giving you a car which effectively they're going to run for you, and all you have to do is put some petrol in and repair the panels when they bend.
Yeah, like you said, it's not very often those opportunities come up in rallying, and actually people normally fight over opportunities like that. So you know, to hear there is an opportunity at grassroots level, where, you know, people are always saying, oh, it's a difficult sport to get into, difficult sport to start off in. If there's an opportunity, grab it with both hands.
I couldn't agree more. And that was kind of one of my other businesses. A couple of other pieces I'm going to do before we come to yours, right? Because yours is a stato one. Of course it is. I love the story, by the way, of Henning Solberg having issues with the fact that he needed a windscreen, and he managed to borrow one out of the hire car, and a hire car from Hertz car hire, apparently from Alexander Lukianuk, and it still had the Hertz car hire sticker on, and they put it in to finish the rally. I just think that's a great story. I love that. It's a proper rallying story for me, that, boys, to be honest with you, where you're borrowing bits off road cars in order to finish a rally. I love a story like that. Commiserations as well to the guys behind the opening round of the BTRDA Gravel Championship over in the UK, the Cambrian Rally. Anyone who has seen the images of what went on, and I've also watched some of the in-car from the Car Zero, which Matt Edwards, of course, British Rally Championship driver, who was running Car Zero for the organisers on that. I watched his in-car as well. It was a rally that was never, ever going to go much beyond where Matt got to in the Car Zero car. And commiserations to those guys. Completely and utterly the right call. And I can't believe some of the idiot comments that I've seen with regards to what how this rally should have run. Completely and utterly idiots. But there you go.
Honestly, happy to chime in at this point if you want my input, because some of the stuff I was reading was bizarre, and it was a completely united front from the competitors on social media and statements and what they were saying to people around. Completely, I don't think anyone on competing in a car on that rally criticised the decision by the organisers to cancel, even though a lot of them had come from so far around the country and put a lot of expense into going to the event, and I didn't hear one of them criticised. So to say that the people who are sat there, keyboard jockeys, typing away, criticising people for cancelling rallies that they weren't at, please think before you speak and put things like that on social media, because it's so damaging to the organisers, and it's just not an accurate expression of what happened when you look at what the competitors are saying.
Oh, absolutely. Well said. Well said. And we come to Ryan's Any Other Business now, which you're going to love this one, Jack Bengen. I know what it is. So Ryan Champion,
it's probably got something to do, if it's about the DS3, then it's probably got something to do with Loeb, so I'll definitely love it.
You're just going to like it. Right, over to you.
Well, firstly, though, before we go on to that, I'm just going to pick up on your Henning Solberg story, because we often talk about recce cars on this programme. We like recce cars. We like these plain white Mitsubishis, Subarus, BMWs, or whatever they might be, Volvos, obviously. But it's very, very rare that anybody actually turns up to recce on a World Championship rally in a Mercedes-Benz Citan van. And Henning Solberg did exactly that. So, you know, we know Henning Solberg's a character, and he just lived up to that character.
I love that. What event was that on?
That was a rally.
It was actually on Sweden. He used a sit-down van. I love it. Henning's just gone up in my estimations massively. There you go. Anyway, Rye, you're Any Other Business, my friend.
Yes. So this started from Monte Carlo. And obviously, we saw Craig Breen driving a DS3, DS3 WRC, 2016 spec car. And then we've seen Stefan Lefebvre drive a sister car in Sweden. It wasn't actually the same car. So the car that Lefebvre drove in Sweden was actually chassis number 6, an ex-Loeb car that Loeb won 4 World Championship rallies in. But the interesting one for me was the car Breen used in Monte Carlo, because it was a 2016 spec car, but actually it was built for 2011. So it was a six-year-old car when it started Monte Carlo, chassis number 16. It was debuted by Kimi Raikkonen way back in Greece in 2011. And since then, it's been driven by, not exclusively, but these are just some of the drivers that have driven that car. So Kimi Raikkonen started with it. Le Mans star Dindo Capello. Now Hyundai star Thierry Neuville, Nasser Al-Attiyah, Sebastian Chardonnay, what happened to him, we'll come back to that another week, Hans Weiss, Robert Kubica, Mats Osberg, Brian Bouffier, Marcus Legato, Khalid Al-Qassimi, Sebastian Lefebvre, and Ivan Muller. Now that's some list of drivers to drive one car, isn't it?
Wow. Wow. Did you know that, Jack?
If I had a microphone in this alleyway that I'm stood in, I would drop it on behalf of Ryan, because that's my favourite Any Other Business I've ever heard.
I knew you'd love that one. I knew you'd love that one. There you go.
It involved two people doing rallying, who also do circuit racing, who I also like a lot, in Kimi Raikkonen and Ivan Muller. And Ivan Muller, multiple and Josh Trophy champion and touring car driver. That's so cool. I'm really, really happy you did that one.
There you go. Boys, on that bombshell, that's the end of the first section of the show. Jack, you can remove yourself now from the alleyway where you've been stood for the last 40 minutes. Same time, same place. Well, kind of, I guess, might not necessarily be the same alleyway next week, but you'll be with us next week, won't you, Jack?
I will, yeah. I've lost me foot in. I've just fallen on the floor. I was that excited by that.
And we're going to go to a break. And me and Ryan are going to come back. We're going to be talking to WRC 2 runner for this season, Gus Greensmith.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back, a friend of the show from last year, certainly from the D-Max Drive Trophy, Gus Greensmith. Hello.
How's it going?
We're really, really good, and we're really excited to have you on, because since we last spoke, you're in a bigger car, and in every sense of the word. You've got a new co-driver, and you've done the opening round of the 2017 WRC 2 Championship. We'll work our way in some kind of order first and foremost. New co-driver for this year, Craig Parry. Again, I've known Craig for a long time. Very, very experienced co-driver. I assume that's a really, really good relationship for you already.
Yeah, no, it's been brilliant. We've put a lot of work in towards this year already, far more than I think I've ever done before, in terms of preparing pace notes and stuff. So once we started working together in about November time, we were pretty, I think we'd done about 1,000 miles of recce practice before the new year. So then when I went away on holiday, we kept in touch and then came back, and then straight again back on the recce practice, went to Monte Carlo for the recce, and then came back and continued working. So it's been a lot of hard work and a lot of miles done.
Very, very experienced guy. Again, he's very unassuming character, unless you get him on the beer. That's a different conversation for a different day, but I have been on the beer with
him. You know what? You're not the first person to tell me that one either.
I can say that about Craig. I know him well enough. But people don't realise just how much he's done, and the drivers who he sat with. Of course, he was a British Rally Champion last year. Let's not forget that as well. But I think that was a really, really good appointment for you. And obviously, you were looking at different options and things like that. But I think that was a really, really good way for you to go. And of course, Craig also knows very well, a very comfortable fit for him is going back to M Sport, of course, who were running your WRC2 programme this year.
Yeah, no, it was the perfect fit, and he was certainly happy with it. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people at M Sport wanted me to have Craig too. So I think it was kind of a perfect scenario, because he was the one that I wanted, obviously. So yeah, no, it was I think everyone was incredibly happy with that decision, and I'm incredibly happy with how it's gone so far. We're bonding far quicker than I thought we would have done, and yeah, it's just that it's a really enjoyable place to be in that car. That I don't feel at any point like there's any pressure or anything. It's just a really enjoyable place to be.
Now, of course, WRC2 program in Sweden, your sort of first snow rally. For people who haven't driven on the study tyres that you use in Sweden, just try and describe the level of grip you get from these tyres.
It's pretty impressive. It depends on the conditions, but that's like anything in rallying, and same on gravel. But when you've got a good firm base and a good patch of ice to actually dig into, the grip is pretty impressive. So that was one of the things for me that really surprised me. And then the braking's still really good on the narrower tyres. But it just took me a little bit of time to begin to understand exactly how much grip I had. It's a slightly different driving style, not too much, but only just a little bit different. But towards the end of the weekend, I was getting more comfortable in the car. But everyone knows that Sweden's a specialist rally, and it was a good time to now get into an R5 onto that surface and start getting the experience.
And not only have you got huge grip on those tyres and on an R5 car, but it's an incredibly fast rally as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that was well, they cancelled one of the stages. I'm not entirely sure why, because for me it didn't feel very dangerous at all. There was massive runoffs, and it was only fast because it was straight. It wasn't fast because it was flowing in close between trees. It was just fast because it was straight. So for me, that stage shouldn't have been cancelled, but it was. But the rest of the rally, like the stage on the last day, Lickenass it was called, was one of the best stages I've ever driven, as well as Royden on the first day. There's some incredible stages, incredible.
Now, you've got a bit of mileage in an R5 car now, obviously moving up from the R2T last year. You've very much been through the M Sport ladder from the R1 car, R2, and now the R5 car. How are you finding adapting to the R5 car?
On a test, when I'm pushing the car, it feels far more comfortable for me to be in an R5. It's kind of how I want to drive a car, and it's and for me, an R2 always felt a bit slow and just not really what a rally car should be. But once I've got into an R5 now, it feels like it's a great car, and it's incredibly easy to drive at high speed. Like, when something goes wrong a lot really quicker, but it's just a better car to be in. So I enjoy my time, but it's the experience of getting the experience of the rally. So for me this year, it's not about pushing hard, it's just about getting the mileage.
So, like you said, so you want to get the mileage. You've got, you know, experienced R5 teammates in the likes of Timo Sunnanen in the M Sport team. You've got obviously Pontus Tiedemann who won R5 in the Skoda in Sweden. So, I guess whilst you want the mileage, you must still be looking at what times they're setting and maybe where they get those times from. Where you think the advantage is?
Yeah, no, that's, I've been keeping a close eye on their time because I know exactly how hard I was pushing. And in Sweden, I was told that just the comfortable pace gets to the end. So I just felt that 70% with 30% room for error was a good pace to be at. So I had a lot of time to come out if I wanted to push, but there was no point because I wasn't there for any results. I was just there to finish, and that was the way I approached the weekend, and it felt like it worked well. And when I looked at the when I watched Pontus's onboards after each night, just to double check that I wasn't doing anything wrong, that was the time was exactly where I thought it was. So for me, I was very happy. Like, to say that if I was to push that I could comfortably be on Pontus's pace would be completely wrong because of the experience he has and the understanding of an R5. But I feel that the pace would have been quite strong if I would have pushed. But just here for the mileage, and that's the way to approach the event, and I think it went really well.
Gus, you talk about gaining mileage and things like that, and is it just WRC2 this year, or are you looking outside of those events as well?
For me, it's just WRC2. That's where I need the experience. Mid Wales would have been a good rally to do, and the British Championship, but that's there no more. So there isn't much reason for me to be in the British Championship. And for me, the aim is to get the mileage on the world stage. If the opportunity ever came up to be in the British Championship, then I'd take it. I'd rip your arm off for it. But for me, if I'm going to make the most out of this learning gear, then it needs to be in the world. It needs to be in the world championship.
Now, you've mentioned about all the miles of recce and stuff like that. Preparation now for your next event. Is next event Portugal for you guys?
Yeah, next event Portugal for me. So that's a while off, but I've got all the recces before then. So it's not long till I'll be heading to Mexico and then coming back for Corsica. So it's still going to be busy, and I have other bits planned, just practicing some stuff on the cars, on mechanic inside. So I have quite a lot planned. So it's not going to be a quiet few months, that's for sure.
Fantastic, fantastic. So just going back, when Rai asked you there, we're building up this. I think originally when we spoke to you, I think towards the end of last year, there was a 2-year program. Is this still the outlook? It's a 2 years, year one, learn the R5, year two, you go and push. Is that still the attitude we're going with?
Yeah, that would be, you'd take everything a year at a time, but that would be the ideal situation, to go by. That's the way I'd like to approach it, but things can change, obviously. Sometimes not for the better, but you never know. So just approaching it one rally at a time. But if I had a choice of how to approach these next 2 years, that would definitely be it.
Good man, good man. Well, you are going to be our man in WRC2 this year.
Am I upgraded
as you
now?
Are our man in the D-Max Rav. You're upgraded. Excuse me, you are upgraded. You are our WRC2 man this year. So are you all right with that?
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good plan to me.
Good man, good man. So we're going to have more of Gus, and we will probably even have Mr. Parry on as well, because Craig's been on a couple of times as well. So we'll get Craig on as well. Maybe get you both on at the same time. Let's hear about this chemistry that's been going on all these recce miles as well. So Gus.
Oh dear, we don't want you to know everything.
Listen, mate, I really, really do appreciate your time, and a fantastic solid result on Sweden. Keep building on that. Keep working on it, because I think your work ethic is phenomenal, and it will bring you success. And again, congratulations on a nice clean run on Rally Sweden.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
No worries at all. Folks, that was Gus Greensmith. Thank you for the download. You know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Both myself, Jack, and Ryan will be back same time, same place next week in your little podcast hole.